The following program is paid for and presented by John DeMasi. The opinions expressed are not those of Town Square Media or station advertisers.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 presents Talk with a Purpose. Join the conversation by calling 407-1450. Now, the host of Talk with a Purpose, John DeMasi.
Good morning. Hour number three, Talk with a Purpose, every Saturday, 9 till noon, right here. WPG Talk Radio 95.5, as we continue our series, Fighting the Opioid Addiction, with our partners, Recovery Centers of America. We always like to have new guests as part of this series, and she is on for the first time. She is Dr. Kerry King, Vice President of Clinical Services at Recovery Centers of America. Dr. King, good morning, and welcome to Talk with a Purpose.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. You know, when we started this, we're now, I guess this is entering our sixth year of this series. I know I originally talked to the folks at Recovery Centers of America. We said, yeah, you know, we figured this opioid crisis, you know, another year or two maybe, and it'll be over. And yeah, famous last words, huh, Dr. King?
Right? Not quite how it has gone, right?
No, not at all. But explain what your job entails as Vice President of Clinical Services.
Sure. I basically am the quarterback for all things clinical within Recovery Centers of America. So across the enterprise of care, whether we're talking about in our residential treatment facilities, in our community-based clinics, within our more expanded digital health offerings, my job is to ensure that we are providing quality clinical services to all of the lives that we touch. So whether that's an individual patient, a family, whether we're providing support to the community, and really to, one, make sure that the services are quality, two, make sure that we are delivering the best variety of services that we can be, and then also to make sure that we are checking in with our consumers and looking at trends in the market to make sure. So if there is something that we are not currently offering, to make sure that that comes on stream. And then finally, I would say to make sure that our team is always best armed with the tools that they need. So whether that's training or a new service line, but making sure that our team has what they need so that they can deliver good care.
Well, that sounds like a lot, and I also understand that in your role, in your job, you're looking for innovative ways to help patients, because, I mean, this is an ever-evolving situation. Tell me, like, one latest innovation that RCA has.
Sure. I'll say this. I think that the treatment approach in general, RCA, is innovative, and we can talk more about that as, you know, our discussion evolves. But one in particular that stands out in my mind is the WorkFlex program at Lighthouse. And I think that that's a beautiful example of leaning in. And by that, I mean that team at our Lighthouse facility in New Jersey, they recognize that particularly during the pandemic, many professionals were coming into treatment, and we're in a more traditional treatment space when people said things like, well, I need to do my payroll, or I need to be checking on my business. Others may have heard that as a barrier to engaging in treatment. The team at Lighthouse said, listen, this is actually an opportunity. This is a problem to be solved. And what we want to do is to remove any barrier. So we want to make sure that if there are people who are living real lives, and that's what we want people in recovery to be doing, let's assist them in being able to do so in a way that makes sense and that supports their capacity to maintain recovery. And so they went about creating a structured program for working professionals, particularly people who are business owners and who function at executive levels in organizations, whereby time is set aside for those individuals to conduct their business and still be able to participate fully in a residential treatment program without choosing one or the other. And it's really worked well.
So in other words, doctor, let me see if I understand this. If they're in treatment at, let's say, in Mays Landing at the Lighthouse, can they go to work for a couple of hours every day or a couple days a week and then come back to treatment? Is that how that works?
Well, not quite. So one of the things that the pandemic has done for us is that it has taught all of us that we can survive and do many things without being physically present. And so what they have created is the ability for people to work remotely. So they can log on to the various infrastructures, they can do their payroll, they can communicate with employees, they can check their email, they can do their banking, they can do the task related to conducting their business and liaising with their employees so that their business getting into jeopardy or failing does not become an additional stressor that amasses while attempting to seek treatment. So there's no need to physically leave. They can function within the confines of treatment.
Oh, I get it. So they're in treatment, and then let's say at 12 o'clock, they can go to their room with their computer and they can do some work. And they come back to treatment at 2 o'clock. Is that kind of how it would work?
Yes.
Okay.
That's
I got it.
Exactly as it is.
Takes me a little while, but I get it. Okay. I wanted to ask you this because we talked yesterday. We talked briefly about your role and about RCA, and you were talking about the impact on the brain, as far as addiction is concerned. And I stopped to think about this, and we've been hearing in the news a lot for the last couple of years about football players and the effect on brains and that kind of thing. And so people are somewhat aware of that. Is this the same kind of thing that addiction and that trauma from addiction, whether it's alcohol or drugs, does that have a long-term effect on the brain?
So it's interesting that you raise that example, because when I'm doing trainings, I often use a similar example. So I'm going to take the long way to answer what you asked me.
Okay.
When, you know, addiction is one of these things that we have in more recent time, although I would say there's decades of research that points to addiction as a brain disease. But for a long time, people who were suffering with addiction were really just thought of as being people who were morally flawed or people who had weak characters or, you know, people who were just bad people. And the notion was that there was a lot of choice that was involved in these behaviors associated with addiction. And so the behaviors became the point rather than the disease. And so a lot of what we were talking about, and honestly, a lot of the ways in which treatment was being done some decades ago really reinforced the notion that this was people choosing poorly. And so as a result, if they would just make a better choice, if we think about, I'm aging myself here, but, you know, as a younger person, I remember campaigns like Just Say No, which were well-intended, but they were kind of along one tone because they suggested that it was as simple as making the determination that you were just going to not do this anymore. Lots of decades of research have shown us that it's a little bit more complicated by that, and by a little, I mean a lot. So I often use the example of individuals who have had a traumatic brain injury, much like what you're describing when you talk about some of these sports injuries, that in those cases, they change the physical structure of the brain. And so we've had an understanding, and as a society, I think, have been able to acknowledge the fact that if we see a physical assault happen to a person, so whether it's a sports injury or somebody was in a car crash or someone slipped in ice and hit their head, but we knew that there was a traumatic impact on the brain, on the head, that then contributed to a brain impact, we could believe that that person's brain had changed and so their personality had changed. And people seem very prepared to accept that, but people really struggle to understand that something very similar was true in the case of addiction. So what research has shown us is that that actually is the case. The long-term substance use, and I can talk about opioid use disorder in particular, long-term substance abuse actually changes the structure and the functioning of the brain in ways that change behavior and that often can appear to change an individual's personality. So yeah, much like what you're talking about with a traumatic impact, because substance use is a traumatic impact on the brain.
Oh, absolutely. As soon as we were talking, and I thought about that, and I said, well, I wanted to ask you that on the show, because that's what I thought of. And it was just in the news this week. I'm a football fan, and Philadelphia Eagles is my team. A player who had...
Happy to hear that.
Okay, good. A player who stopped playing. Now listen to this, doctor. He stopped playing in 1966. So he hadn't played for years. And he recently passed away. And they studied his brain. And they said that he had suffered these long-term effects. And he hadn't played in 50 years. So imagine what the drugs do. That scared me when I saw that, you know, and I'm thinking, boy, this thing is worse. This addiction issue is worse than what we thought. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, it absolutely is. And, you know, it's one of those things where the practitioner in me, the person who cares passionately about this and wants us to understand that people who are suffering with addiction are not morally flawed, they're not throwaway people. That part of me is really excited that this kind of conversation is beginning to emerge. The part of me, obviously, that doesn't want to see anybody suffer is devastated by the impact of addiction on people and people's brains. And, you know, when we talk about opioid use disorder in particular, we're talking about the structures of the brain that impact your ability to think, plan, be logical, delay gratification, which is just a fancy way for saying you see something that you want and you tell yourself this is not the moment to have it. And so you're allowed to wait a little bit because you realize that it's not life or death whether you have it in this moment. Those kinds of functional areas of the brain are impacted by the substances. The other important thing I want to point out is that the centers for reward and motivation, the parts of the brain that control that, are also impacted by substance abuse. And so, for instance, where it's getting nice now, so you're going to see a lot of people with their top down and, you know, maybe driving a little faster than they should, but we can argue that there is a level of thrill that comes along with that, right? I've already heard the motorcycles out there on the road, and to me, that's one of those bellwether signs that let us know that the warm weather is here. People are pulling out their bikes, and you're probably wondering where I'm going with this. But all of this to say that there are lots of natural ways that we as human beings have found to have thrills. I am an island girl. I'm from the Caribbean. And, you know, I think about people kind of cliff diving into our beautiful blue oceans and the level of thrill that comes along with doing that, with parasailing, with these regular kind of human behaviors that just give the brain that dose of dopamine that says, hey, that was exciting. Well, our brain learns, and that's a good thing, because we learn that if something gives you pleasure, you tell your brain says, hold on to that one. I want to remember that one for later so I can do it again. So your brain remembers the experience of pleasure. What happens with addiction is that it turns up the pleasure volume by like multiples of 10. And it robs the brain of the regular capacity to experience your typical, hey, I'm on the back of my bike. It's a beautiful spring day. I'm just enjoying that. If that gave an individual on a scale of 0 to 10 a pleasure rating of 7 before, when they have had the impact of the substance and the substance now feels like a 40, when you go back to doing something that could stimulate a 7 out of 10 pleasure experience for you, it now feels like a 0.5 by comparison. And so the brain, as an object of learning, learns really quickly to lock on to the memories and the associations and the behaviors related to getting that pleasure kick at a 40. And frankly, you had to do a lot less work for that 40 than you had to do for that 7. So just as adaptive human beings, right? We learn that you do the most efficient thing. And in the moment, the brain is not making a judgment call about, is this morally right? Is this going to be good for me in the long run? The brain just remembers that with doing very little work, it had the experience of a 40. And so the brain says, do that again.
You know, doctor, that's such a thorough explanation. I've never heard an explanation like that, and that was really terrific. But it scares me for those who are addicted. I mean, I'm listening to you, and I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. No wonder they can't get off the stuff. You know,
absolutely.
That was really terrific.
Yep.
I thank you for really explaining it so well. But wow, this whole thing has been
scary.
Yeah, it's been from the very beginning. Absolutely. You know, when we started the show, like I told you, I mean, and we thought, well, you know, we'll do it a few years, and then this thing is going to go away. And guess what? It's like, and the pandemic didn't help. That certainly didn't help.
Right.
In fact, it made it worse.
Oh, my word.
Yeah, made it worse.
Well,
you know,
we can certainly talk about that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The pandemic has just been, I mean, and there's so many aspects of it now with the pandemic, because what the pandemic has done is increase stress. And we know that stress contributes to addiction. Because addiction, I mean, there are many pathways there, right? But one way certainly is as an attempt to cope with something that you want to go away.
Right.
So if we think about normal, quote unquote, normal behaviors for people who don't meet criteria for substance use disorder, it is not atypical for people in stressful positions to make it to Friday evening and then think, oh, I survived. Let me go have a beer with my friend. They may not drink during the week. They may not drink often. But there's a reason why happy hour is on the weekends, why Friday evening happy hour is a thing.
Yeah.
Because people reward themselves for having survived the stressful experience of their week. Now, I could go on for hours about chronic stress, which we can talk about later. But let's just talk about the stress of the pandemic.
All right. Well, you know what, doctor? Hold that thought, because we are coming up.
Okay.
We have here in radio what we call breaks. So we can pay the bills.
Ah.
All right.
So
we have to do that. And we'll pick that thought up after the break. It's Talk with a Purpose every Saturday, 9 till noon, WPG, Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station. I'm John DeMasi. We have as our guest Dr. Kerry King. She is the Vice President of Clinical Services for Recovery Centers of America, as we continue our Fighting the Opioid Addiction series with our partners, Recovery Centers of America. And, of course, their location here locally is the Lighthouse at Mays Landing. 609-407-1450 is our number here. If you have a question for Dr. King, she certainly will be happy to talk to you and take your question. 609-407-1450. Coming back with more with Dr. Kerry King after these words. And we're back here, Recovery Centers of America. We always say this when they're on the show. They have a toll-free number, 24/7 hotline. And believe me, I can tell you, I was there at the call center. It most likely doesn't get to the second ring. 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY. If you have any question at all, any issue with a family member, a friend, a loved one, whatever the case, you call that number, 1-800-RECOVERY. 1-800-RECOVERY, and they will direct you from there. Our guest today is Dr. Kerry King. She is the Vice President of Clinical Services for Recovery Centers of America. We've been really having a fascinating discussion with Dr. King, her first time on the show. And our number here in the studio, if you have a question for Dr. King, 609-407-1450. Speaking of someone who has a question, the one and only Dawn Bellamarich from Recovery Centers of America. Dawn, what are you jealous this morning that you're not on the show?
When I hear it's somebody else, John, I get so upset. And it's just, you know, I have to call in and start asking questions.
Okay, well, go ahead. It's your dime. Go ahead.
It's nice to talk to you. Hi, Kerry.
Hi, Dawn.
I just was like listening to what you were saying, and I think obviously, you know, I know that you're brilliant, and the way you were eloquently discussing,
very sweet,
you know, the delayed gratification, well, and honest, But I was hoping, you know, there would be a way to talk about our patient engagement specialists and, like, for anybody who's wondering what we're doing to help delay that gratification for our patients coming into treatment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. And see, this is why Dawn is brilliant, because she makes the linkages directly to what's happening in care. And Dawn, I didn't know you were listening when I talked about your fantastic WorkFlex program. So that I was not paid to do that. I want to say from the outset.
I appreciate that.
No, I think so. One of the things that Recovery Centers of America, and I want to say it, I have been with the company since August, and so many of the things, and this is with 2 decades of experience in this field, I've seen Recovery Centers of America be very deliberate about doing things differently. There's a phrase within RCA about disrupting business as usual, and one of those things is really the placement of our engagement specialists specifically on site. And so these are individuals who are skilled in intervention. These are individuals who, as their title indicates, are really skilled at engagement. And so anybody who presents for treatment as high risk for leaving before they have a chance to settle in and let their brains begin to do the work of healing, we link them with our engagement specialists. These are sometimes individuals who we know have had treatment failures to the extent that they have come in to, whether it was us or another treatment space, and then they have left very quickly against medical advice, and we know this person is at risk for doing this again. Our engagement specialists work with them very early in the treatment stay, and they teach them skills specifically around grounding and around motivation. So basically what I'm saying is they teach them to be a little bit more calm and at peace in their bodies so that they begin to be able to survive some of the cravings and the urges that are just kind of washing over them like a flood. And they also teach them some very specific skills, you know, related to increasing motivation for remaining in treatment. Once you have the experience of being able to survive an urge with support, you know that you can do it again. So that overwhelming sense that the urge will kill you, which can feel like a real thing if you've been through it, once you survive that with someone who is there and who knows how to input those skills, you find yourself having come out of that with an experience that in many ways can be game changing, because now you know that one, you won't die. Now you know that two, you have the capacity to do it. And three, the same brain that got you into this in the first place has had a corrective experience. And so learning takes place where that is concerned as well. And that's how we utilize our engagement specialist.
Do you get all that, Dawn?
I did, and I just wanted to support Carrie, but we have a lot of solutions for that, and I think it's important for people to touch on that because we get a lot of calls and inquiries around, like, you know, relapse and some of the innovative things we're doing to help patients stay in treatment. So thanks, Carrie. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Dawn, thank you very much. Thanks for jumping in here and contributing to the show. Dawn Bellamarich from, of course, Recovery Centers of America. Dr. King, you started to touch on something about the relationship of stress, anxiety, and substance abuse. Kind of goes hand in hand. Can you talk a little more about that?
Yeah. So some things related to substance use are framed in terms of what we're trying to get, the reward that we're trying to get, but some things are related to what we're trying to avoid. And so the substance use and anxiety link really is often about avoidance. So the avoidance of toxic stress, the avoidance of, again, that what I was talking about with Dawn just now around having survived a craving. In the midst of craving, that overwhelming sense that, like, your body and your brain is going to shut down. People think that they're going to die. And so anybody who has had the experience of being worried about death, you pretty much do anything that you can to avoid it, right? And so sometimes the substance use is about avoiding something that feels overwhelming or devastating whether that's related to a craving or whether that's related to life circumstances that a person just does not feel like they have the innate capacity to manage. And so the substance blunts that. Now, John, by now you know that I don't have any short answers. I only have long answers.
That's okay. That's why you're a doctor and I'm the host. You have the long answers, okay?
well, hopefully that keeps working, but let's see. So, the one other thing I just kind of want to say is that with regard to our experiences, they kind of crest and fall like waves. So in many instances, if you have had a euphoric experience, a joy, happiness, whatever, if you've had an extraordinarily sad experience, probably in this moment, this is not the most joy or the most happiness that you have felt because our emotions wax and wane. One of the things that substance use can do is, again, that brain and learning. When the brain learns that a substance will blunt the effect of a negative emotion, it reinforces the notion that to experience that emotion will be devastating. And so there is a fair connection that gets pre-wired in the brain. And so people will often continue to use the substance because they're afraid that if they had the full experience of their emotion, it would be more than they could manage. That's often the case with anxiety. And so you will see people continue to use a substance to, no pun intended, blunt the impact of anxiety in particular, because they're trying to experience what the full extent of anxiety looks like. What they do in the process, though, is that they rob themselves of that natural notion of realizing that it will peak and then it will crest on its own. So they begin to think that the only way it will decrease is through the use of the substance, which obviously is not true, but the brain doesn't get the chance to know that.
So my follow-up to that would be, as part of your treatment, as part of that, do you aim to stop, reduce the anxiety, and is that the goal, and how do you do that?
Absolutely.
How do you do that?
Absolutely. Well,
okay.
That's the treatment.
All right.
That's the treatment.
So the goal of the treatment is to stop that, but it's not like, okay, snap your fingers, stop. It's like you have to go through this whole treatment procedure and so on and so forth. But it seems to me, the goal of the treatment is to stop the anxiety. But it seems to me, and tell me if I'm wrong, that anxiety is a formidable foe, especially for you and any member of your staff at Recovery Centers of America.
Absolutely. And so more than to just stop the anxiety is to break that linkage that anticipates that the anxiety, that the substance is the only thing that can keep the anxiety at bay. So there's a huge experiential portion of this. You know, for years we've had treatments for anxiety that involved immersion that were really, really successful. And I don't necessarily mean just RC, I mean the industry in general. But the problem with those treatments is that people wouldn't allow themselves to be exposed to them because, again, the anxiety, right? So the very experience of the symptom was a barrier to engaging in the treatment. A lot of the work that we do, you'll hear buzzwords like mindfulness, and we talk about biofeedback. I'm sure that one of my colleagues has talked about the availability of biofeedback at Recovery Centers of America. But these treatments are really centered around teaching skills to quiet the mind and to quiet that physical, physiological reaction that happens in the anticipation of stress. So you teach the body to be in a relaxed state, and then the body is in a different position to begin to receive the kind of retraining that is required to long-term overcome the addiction. But to be open to it, you've got to get that body and that brain to kind of become quiet enough to receive what's available.
You know, doctor, the more I do this show, and particularly today, since you've been on, I realize how difficult your job is and the staff at RCA, because you've got a lot of hurdles to climb for patients. And I commend all of you, because this is not an easy job. I mean, listening
it's rewarding,
to your
though.
Yeah, it is. But listening to your explanations, I'm thinking to myself, how do they do this? You know, how does this actually happen? But it does happen. And it's happened for a lot of people. We are coming up on a break, Doctor. We have more to talk about with you, of course. Dr. Kerry King is our guest. She is the Vice President of Clinical Services for Recovery Centers of America. It's our Fighting the Opioid Addiction series. And if you have any kind of a question regarding treatment, or regarding someone that you may know who has what you think could be an addiction problem, this is your time to call in at 609-407-1450. That's our number here, 609-407-1450. Again, Dr. Kerry King, our guest with Recovery Centers of America. With Dr. King, I'm your host, John DeMasi. More on Talk with a Purpose after these words. We are back here on Talk with a Purpose. Our guest, Dr. Kerry King, Vice President of Clinical Services at Recovery Centers of America. And, of course, we continue our Fighting the Opioid Addiction series. The 1-800-RECOVERY number, which I gave you before, I'll give you again, and that's a 24/7 hotline where you can just call at any time, and they'll answer and they'll direct you as to, you know, what you need at that particular point. 1-800-RECOVERY is the number, 1-800-RECOVERY for Recovery Centers of America. As I said before, I've been to the call center. I've been to all of the local Recovery Centers of America centers. And I did meet the director of the call center, and, I mean, I watched it in action. First ring, boom, they got it. So you give them a call, 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY is the number. Our number here in the studio right now, if you have a question for Dr. Kerry King, 609-407-1450, 609-407-1450. You know, Dr. King, you and I were talking about people who are suffering from addiction, and they just don't seem to be ready until they're ready. So It's like, how do you get them ready? How do you get them to the point to say, hey, you know, you really need this?
Yeah, and I wish there was a simple and straightforward answer to that, right? I think that I remember I listened to a bit last week where Trish, who is our VP for family, was on, and she was talking about the importance of family and connection. And again, I'll say about this disease that one of the things that we've preached for, well, the industry, I don't think I've personally preached it, but the notion of tough love and that was always communicated in a way that made it sound like you needed to sever ties with people who weren't ready. And we now know, thank God, that that is the absolute opposite of what you need to do. You do need to establish good boundaries so that you're kind of not caught up in the undertow. But there's a difference between establishing good boundaries and cutting a person off when they are most at risk for feeling isolated by something that's taken over their will and their volition. Again, if you think about all the things that I've said so far around the way that this addiction works, you can see how this beast could convince you that you need it or you will die. And so when we talk about readiness to change, it really is about someone getting to the point where they begin to understand that despite the risk associated with stopping, and there are risks associated with stopping, that it's worth it. Sometimes that comes by way of family. Sometimes that comes by way of somebody who really loves you saying, I can't watch you do this anymore. Sometimes it comes by way of somebody helping you to see yourself. So holding up that metaphorical mirror and saying, listen, I know who you are, but here's what you're doing. And these two things don't match. I believe that you can fight for you, and I'm prepared to stand alongside you when you fight for you. You know, and these are ways that loved ones have often been more successful than we treating professionals have at getting individuals to come into treatment. So not slamming the door, but saying, listen, I got you. I'm with you. But we can't keep going like this. This is not sustainable.
I want to ask you, go the opposite side for a moment, Dr. King. What about when a spouse or a loved one or a parent says, that's it, you either straighten up or get out? Is that Is that a good approach, or are you saying that's not a good approach? Talk about that.
You can love somebody from a distance, and that person can understand that you love them from a distance. You have the right to say that you cannot set my house on fire while I stand in the middle of the living room singing Kumbaya and telling you that I love you. Nobody's doing that. And so I certainly am not recommending that. What I'm saying is you don't have to cut a person off completely, but you get to set boundaries about what's going to be okay in your life. You don't have to go up in flames because your loved one is not ready. Now, I personally don't believe in ultimatums, and let me explain. I don't mean that you don't get to say, listen, you can't live here anymore if you're going to continue in these behaviors. What I mean by an ultimatum is saying that, hoping that the individual will change. If you're going to set a boundary for yourself, that's what it's got to be. It's got to be a boundary for you. You have got to have reached the point where you have decided that these behaviors are no longer tolerable for you. They're impacting your life negatively. They're impacting your stress, your capacity to cope, your kids' well-being, all of those things, whatever the it is for you. And you absolutely have the right to say, no, I'm not doing that. And I'm not just talking about addiction. You have the right to do that just in your life. But when you do that, it has got to be because you will not tolerate it anymore. You can't do it because you're hoping that the threat is going to make somebody change, because there's nothing but tons of disappointment that's going to come along with that notion, right? When the individual, what happens when they call your bluff? What happens if you issued the ultimatum, but really your wish was that they were going to say, oh, okay, Carrie, I'll change for you. And they're like, yeah, no, I'm not doing it. What do you do then?
Yeah,
are
you're
you
right.
Ready to say they can't come home?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. You put yourself in a corner when you do it that way. Right. Exactly.
You sure do.
Yes. I got you. It's a tough thing. I mean, it's a tough thing. And you know, Trish was on, as you mentioned, last month, and we talked about families. It's a tough thing for families. It's a tough thing for anybody around you. It's a tough thing for coworkers. I mean, it's difficult no matter which way you look at it. It's extremely difficult. And
it's extremely difficult.
Let's talk about, I understand that the RCA had something called a neighborhood model. A neighborhood model program, and it's kind of being revived. Can you talk about that and what that is and how it can help in this whole process?
I absolutely will. But first, I'd be remiss if I didn't do this. So let me just circle back for 1 second to say that while the loved one is getting ready, the family can be ready, and there are lots of treatment options that we offer at RCA where family members can engage. And, you know, all of those are available on our website. We offer free family support on a weekly basis, and then we do Seeds to Recovery on a monthly basis. And all of that, the links for registering, all of that is available on our website. So I don't want anybody who's listening and thinking, okay, well, my loved one is not ready to do this. I don't want you to think that you can't get resources to be okay, because that's not true. If you're ready, then you seek the help that you need.
Right. Okay, well, that makes sense. That makes sense, sure. So talk about the neighborhood model program. What is that all about?
Yes. So I will say that neighborhood model is not entirely brand new to RCA, but it is being revised because it was certainly disrupted during the pandemic when we needed to put isolation protocols in place while we were pending people's test results and so on. But the concept of a neighborhood is really treatment centers established in communities, and then within our treatment centers, we are creating what could be considered a community within a community. So we're talking about small groups of individuals who are presenting with similar treatment needs, who are treated by a small group of consistent staff members, and our whole intent is to increase that sense of being known and understood. So fewer people working with you, the same group of people working with you, fewer people in your treatment cohort, and being able to have your treatment tailored to your specific needs and have consistent contact and follow up by a multidisciplinary group of professionals who are able to intervene with you more readily. Because they're kind of your tribe. They're your squad.
So
that's the basic premise of the neighborhood.
So the pandemic, of course, once again, here we go. The pandemic affected that. And now we seem to be easing up on things and it's coming back. So that's a good thing.
Yes, we're approaching it differently for sure. So our protocols have changed around the pandemic. There was a time where we needed to have individuals come in and isolate for a couple of days until, you know, we got test results back. We are able to get test results back far more quickly. And so people can be placed in a neighborhood when they enter treatment. So you begin to establish the relationships that will continue throughout your treatment stay from the front door. You don't have to go through multiple interchanges, getting used to new treatment team members, new peers. The group that you can admit with, that's going to be the group that see you through the treatment episode.
Okay, Dr. King, we're coming up on our final break of the morning, which means we still have some time for you to jump in here if you have a question for Dr. Kerry King. She is the Vice President of Clinical Services for Recovery Centers of America. 609-407-1450 is our number here. Again, 609-407-1450. I'm John DeMasi. Final thoughts with Dr. Kerry King and our Fighting the Opioid Addiction series for today after these words. Welcome back to Talk with a Purpose. Dr. Kerry King is our guest. She is from Recovery Centers of America. She is the Vice President of Clinical Services at Recovery Centers of America. And we've been having a fascinating conversation with Dr. King here today on the show. 1-800-RECOVERY is the number for Recovery Centers of America, 1-800-RECOVERY. And as Dr. King said earlier, check out the website. There's a lot of good information on that as well. Recovery Centers of America have a great website. So, Dr. King, that leads me to a question, which we touched on it at the very beginning of the hour, and that is the difference. RCA, their program, their treatment protocols are different from others. And can you explain that and what's different about Recovery Centers of America?
I'll tell you, it's philosophy. Simply put, RCA is the little engine that could. I've never seen anything like it, and I've been doing this for a while. RCA, you know, we quote statistics in substance use treatment, and we talk about, you know, percentages of people who present with substance use disorder or who would meet criteria but never seek treatment. We talk about relapse rates, and there is a way that in our industry you can kind of get used to saying things like, well, addiction is a chronically relapsing disease. RCA fundamentally rejects the notion that anybody should relapse. It rejects the notion that anybody should die from this disease. And there is a way in which that is such a part of the culture. So when I talk about innovation, there really is just this culture of we got to solve it. It's not okay for anyone to die. It's not okay for anyone to be a statistic. It's not okay for people to relapse. And so the innovation is just driven by that notion of, no, we're not going to accept the industry statistics. Even if we're doing better than most in our treatment space, there is no resting on laurels in RCA. There is a determination to just find those untapped solutions. And that's not just talk. I'm telling you, I'm in here, you know, this is how this company functions at all levels. It's amazing.
Yeah. You know, I tell this story every time. I don't know if you've heard it yet. Did you hear about the 500 mattress story? Have you heard that?
I don't think I have.
Okay. So they were expanding the facility at the Lighthouse, and they were increasing the number of beds. And so they have a grand opening, open house, and they invite the media, and they invite a lot of people, and I was there. And we're walking around, and I tell you what, the facility is beautiful. It looked like a hotel room, and I was joking. I said, mm-hmm. When can you check into this hotel? And they were laughing. So I sat down on one of the beds, and it was really comfortable. And the person, the tour guide, said, how many mattresses do you think Brian O'Neill, he's the CEO. He had us try before we picked the mattress. I said, I don't know, 10? 500. 500. I said, what? Yeah. So everybody had to pick so many, and then they had a consensus, and that's what happened. So thorough, yeah. I always say when we do the show, I tell the story. Now, obviously, you're new to RCA, and you didn't know that, but I always tell the story, the 500 mattress story. So that goes to show you, thorough is the middle name at RCA.
That's RCA in, I mean, honestly, in a story, because the notion is nothing, how big or small, is going to be the barrier to someone not seeking treatment. So an uncomfortable mattress is not going to be the reason that somebody says, I can't stay it, and that is RCA.
Well, Dr. King, we really do thank you for spending some time with us today. I thought it was fascinating. I learned a lot, and I never had an explanation like you gave us earlier about addiction. We really do appreciate your time, and thanks again, and we look forward to having you again on our program sometime in the near future. And good luck with everything
Thank
you're doing you. At RCA, okay?
I appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
All right, thanks a lot. Dr. Kerry King, Vice President of Clinical Services, again, that 24/7 hotline number for Recovery Centers of America, 1-800-RECOVERY, 1-800-RECOVERY is the number for Recovery Centers of America. And looking at the clock, that's going to put the wraps on another edition of Talk with a Purpose. Thanks to Dr. Kerry King, and thanks to the staff of Recovery Centers of America for contributing to the backstory of having her on today here on the show. Thanks to Tom Foley, candidate for mayor of Atlantic City. We certainly got a lot of information out of that. And, of course, thanks to you for listening. Thanks to Chris Coleman, our program director and producer, who actually got a bottle of wine out of this today. Go home and enjoy. I'm John DeMasi. Always a pleasure. Thanks for listening. Have yourself a great week. We'll do it all over again next Saturday. Talk with a Purpose, 9 till noon. WPG, Talk Radio 95.5. You take care.